Where to, number one?
You're the captain. Captain.
We discovered a new moon at Endrin 2.
That we did, sir.
Thank you, number one. In that case, let's give her a spin.
That sound good to you, Mr. Spock?
Yes, Captain. Let us see what the future holds.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton pulling a space hood off my head in style.
In celebration, because this week we're going to talk about why we can't wait to visit Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, Cam, it's official. We're finally getting that Captain Pike spinoff we've been pining for ever since Brother, the season premiere of
Tyler.
Every season two.
Not pining for. Not Chris Pine. This is Christopher Pike.
Oh, piking for.
That's right.
I apologize. Yeah, I was getting my Kirk and my Pike mixed up a second there. Yeah, but Cam, what was your initial reaction when this news went live?
Well, this is a weird one because I think we all knew this was coming. Like, this wasn't a shock that they suddenly announced this out of nowhere. We all had been, I mean, I think since maybe Pike's first or second episode, we were like, come on, we need a Pike spinoff. We need a Pike spinoff. And it seemed like all they did was tease us for months on end. So like when this announcement came, I can't say it was a shock, but I was really, really excited and happy to finally have it confirmed that this was going to be a thing that existed.
I was just pleased that, like, even during the pandemic, they're making deals happen, which is very, very optimistic stuff for us to look at. And the one thing that gave me a little concern, though, is I do recall, you know, months ago, you know, we had Anson Mount, a.k.a. Christopher Pike. He was kind of going back and forth saying stuff, well, you know, I don't know, these TV shows are commitments. They filmed Discovery in Toronto. Do I want to be out there for 9 months of the year when my home's in California? That might just have been a negotiation tactic. But to me, I didn't think it was a 100% locked deal. But I just think that CBS Viacom would have been just utterly cruel if they had been teasing us for this long and nothing came of it.
Well, especially because they seem very intent on milking their Star Trek franchise for everything it's worth. And, you know, I remember after season one Discovery, they talked about how they were considering spinoffs for like every single character, including like Harry Mudd.
Yeah.
And we were like, really? Okay. And then, of course, they did announce the Section 31 spinoff with Georgiou. And again, I think a lot of Trekdom was just like, really? Well, I guess.
Didn't really light the world on fire.
Definitely not. Like, I can't say, you know, people weren't like furious about it, but it was like, huh. I mean, it felt very flat coming off of, you know, the announcement of season two Discovery and then Picard, of course, people were so excited by. And then they announced Section 31 and people are like, well, that's no Picard. And so when you're going to do a spinoff, yeah, you want something that fans are excited about. And the mere fact, fans were just like creating all these petitions online, week to week, just going beyond thrilled over, you know, the new versions of Spock and Pike. Maybe less so number one, because she didn't have a lot to do on the show on Discovery. But nonetheless, they love this new look at the Enterprise. And if you're CBS, like, why would you not make that spinoff when you have an audience that's like ravenous for it?
And I think creatively, they set things up pretty well at the season two finale of Discovery, you know, like, because I think one of the problems that people were bringing up, though, is like, well, are you going to have two contemporaneous ships, you know, in space at the same time during the same time period? Like, does that make much sense? And, well, we don't have to worry about that with, you know, Discovery being, you know, the ship lost in space. The other thing going into it, unlike Discovery, I think they have a mission statements with Strange New Worlds going in. Like, Discovery has been searching for what it is about for about two seasons. I think they finally figured it out. And I think right away, you know what this show is about. It is the direct prequel to, you know, Kirk and Company. They're going to be going through that mission statements of, you know, Strange New Worlds, seeking out new life and new civilizations. So I think that's an exciting starting point for a spinoff series.
And also, of course, continuing the evolution of Spock so that we get to know the Spock we first got to really know at the beginning of the original series. So there's definitely room to move.
Hats off to Ethan Peck for, I think, almost being given an impossible task and actually doing well on it. I think he benefited much for the fact that Spock is obviously going through some mental health issues, and so you know going in he's not going to be the Spock that we're super familiar with, and I think that's going to be a journey of him becoming more like the Spock that we're familiar with as the series goes on. I don't think that there's going to be these horrible continuity issues about, you know, why is Spock so out of character from the man that I met, you know, 7 years in the future? It's kind of like, no,
right.
He's still, you know, coming into his own at this point in the timeline.
And even still, I mean, Spock isn't like, he's a little bit wonky even at the start of the original series. So there's plenty of room to play. You know, you don't have to worry about having Spock, you know, the one we all remember from Amok Time, for example.
of course. But
throwing soup.
But look, we got that first, you know, glimpse of him, I guess, really with Q&A, you know, because that even takes place before, you know, the cage and the menagerie and all that. So they are giving hints that, he's a little goofy. I'm all right with goofy Spock. It's going to be fun to see the character that way. And we already know that Ethan Peck has the chops to do the character justice.
Well, I mean, Spock is a funny character. You go to the original series, he's frequently hilarious, whether it's in his insult wars with Bones, just some of his reactions to moments, you know, where Kirk just kind of gives him basically the double glance. You know, Spock gets a lot of funny stuff to do. And he does in the movies as well. He gets more serious, obviously, in the motion picture, which is definitely isn't a yuck fest. But when you're doing, like, Voyage Home, Spock is really funny.
Yeah. What do you think about the potential behind number one, a.k.a. Una, in this? Because as you mentioned, she didn't get a ton of screen time until probably the last two episodes of the show. Mm-hmm. I know I asked you that question, but I'm going to answer my own question first, and then I'll let you take it.
Go nuts.
The key here for me is, will the three leads have chemistry? And we already know that the answer is yes. I think that there's going to be less of that period that we often get in Star Trek of the series finding itself. I think the show kind of knows its tone. It knows what's going to work with the leads, what might not work. The fact that, you know, number one has chemistry with both Pike as well as Spock, I don't know, that's weight off my shoulders going into a new show.
Yeah, it's nice to have that out of the way where we don't have to be concerned about that. Because, you know, you look at maybe season one Picard where there's a lot of questions like, well, I mean, how is Patrick Stewart going to relate to his new co-stars? And, you know, that was up in the air. And, you know, I think arguments vary about how well it worked through season one. But here, right out of the gate,
is a little mixed.
It was very mixed, yeah. Him and Elnor had, I mean, it was off the charts. It was an explosion of charisma and chemistry between those
two. You're talking about child Elnor, right?
Yes, that's the only one. Was there another one?
Yeah, I can't.
Did Elnor come back?
If he did, he really did not do anything worthy of our attention, I'll say that much.
Yeah, I don't really remember him ever coming back. But anyways, here we know these three right out of the gate, like crackle, like they really have it going on. And I can't wait to see how they flesh out the rest of the cast, because you can't just have these three as the sole focus of the show, even though you technically could. But because it's Star Trek, we're going to, of course, have a more, I think, diverse supporting cast, I would hope.
Than just three white leads, Cam?
I know. Isn't that unfortunate? It's like the one thing that you kind of go like, oh, that didn't really work out probably the way that anyone really wanted it to. But
it is a bit of a vestige of the pilot being produced, the cage being produced in 1964, you know?
Yeah.
That's just it. Like, I agree with you. I think that they're going to have kind of an ensemble sort of crew. They'll be looking at a diverse crew as well. I don't think it's going to be, you know, circa 1994 Friends in Central Perk or anything like that, you know?
Sure. But, you know, you asked about number one, and I really do think this is Rebecca Romijn's chance to define that character. I mean, no offense to Majel Barrett, who introduced the character in The Cage. Number one was a pretty vaguely sketched out character. We were told she's hyper competent, and I don't know. That was about it. She kind of had like a, you know, a bit of a will they, won't they romance kind of airs going about with Pike, but I don't think we need that in this show. So I really am looking forward to seeing what she does with the character of number one, because I talked when Discovery started about how Anson Mount would be able to really make Pike his own, because the two versions we'd gotten, the Bruce Greenwood and the Jeffrey Hunter, were so very different. And
don't forget Sean Kenney. That was a very different portrayal as well, in Pike in a wheelchair.
Beep, beep. and so, like, that was really his chance to really define what Pike is for our era, and maybe for a lot of viewers who Pike is, period. And I really think even more so Rebecca Romijn gets to do that. I mean, Ethan Peck didn't with Spock, and never will with Spock, but number one is a character that, I mean, I don't know, how many people other than hardcore Trek fans really even know who number one is?
Like, virtually none, right?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Hopefully she can also push back about comments, you know, Pike was making in The Cage, where he's walking around the bridge saying, I don't feel comfortable with having a woman on the bridge. Like, I think that goes into the alt continuity bucket, right, Cam? That can't actually be continuity as well.
I think that one's out the door. Do you think that Pike's, the Jeffrey Hunter Pike's favorite Star Trek episode would be Turnabout Intruder?
I was just going to make a Turnabout Intruder reference as well.
Yeah. Really, yeah. I think we can kick that out the door. I mean, the canon elements of The Cage, I mean, I guess it is canon now because obviously they tied it all into the Menagerie, but I think you can kind of pick and choose what you like, keep your iconic characters, and, you know, everything else we can kind of, you know, like, we don't need to necessarily see Yeoman Colt. You know, she could be gone at this point, or, you know, do like cast an entirely different type of actress in the role, give her all new things to do. No one is going to care.
No, I don't think there's big cult fanatics waiting on bated breath for her to make another appearance on the show. It'd be great if they actually hired the original actress, though. She's still alive. I was on Memory Alpha taking a look. She's 77 years old.
Yeah, it really pisses me off. She was at the Vegas Con a couple years ago, and I didn't do an autograph photo. And I'm like, why? Why did I not? That was really dumb of me.
You can get in contact with her and tell her, hey, you know what? Netflix is doing cool things with Robert De Niro in The Irishman. You know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Hey, maybe we'll get a time travel episode where we get to see young and older Yeoman Colt.
I look, CBS, these are free ideas. Come on, guys.
And they're free for a reason.
You know, before we get too deep into other characters, though, why don't we talk about the format of the show? Because we have been critiquing Picard and Discovery about the same thing, you know, week in, week out. I don't think either of us think that the serialized format is really playing to the strengths of modern Star Trek. And we had Akiva Goldsman, who is unfortunately one of the co-creators, developers of this show. We're not really big fans of his, but he came out and he said something that actually letting us sleep at night, in which he says that this is going to be more of an episodic sort of series with kind of ongoing serialized story elements, but it's not like we're going to be following one ongoing story throughout the show, which to me, that's exactly what I want to hear.
Yeah, and he also mentioned that it would be probably more episodic even than DS9, which I was definitely surprised by. And also said, you know, but it won't be entirely like the original series. And he brought up the example of City on the Edge of Forever, where Kirk has to sacrifice Edith Keeler at the end. And he said, but, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to continue forward in the next couple episodes and have Kirk dealing with that? And I agree 100%. I think the idea of doing emotional arcs with the characters is hugely important, and I think could bring a lot of life to, again, the episodic format, which some people might say is outdated, but I think we can find ways to make it more modern and interesting. And I think emotional arcs are going to be far more, hopefully, effective than the story arcs that we've seen so far on Picard and arguably Discovery.
Yeah, I go back to the Mad Men model. You know, I've done it like a million times on this show. But the thing is, every season of Mad Men, you start off with kind of episodic storytellings where there's an emotional journey going for all the characters as the season goes on. there's some story elements introduced. And then by the time you get to the end of the season, you're like, oh, I see where the story's been going this entire time. You've got this emotional journey with the characters. I think if they tap into that model, or even the Lost model, which is a little bit more serialized, but I felt every single time I was watching Lost, every episode was telling a beginning, middle, and end. It was like a fully encapsulated sort of episode. And I remember I was listening to the Next Conversation podcast recently, and they're talking about how with Picard, it felt like they were telling a lot of half stories every episode, and just as a result of that serialized format. And I'm just very excited about the idea of Star Trek going back to telling fully formed, fully realized stories, you know, A, B, C points within the course of a single hour.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, you can even say that Discovery had a little bit of that going on as well, especially in season one, where you would have, like, for example, the episode where they go to the ship where everyone's been turned inside out by the spore technology, but it's kind of dealt with in about 12 minutes or something. Like, it's like they want to have their sort of isolated little adventure, but make it more of a serialized show. I am looking so forward to getting back to the idea of, you know, like high concept planets or adventures where we tackle a sci-fi idea or theme and just resolve that within an episode or two. Like, that allows for a lot more variety and a lot of the genre hopping that I think is what makes Star Trek so amazing and gives it that vitality that allows, you know, some of these shows to run for like 160 episodes or whatever.
I also think it just makes the storytelling much more memorable, though, because, look, I reach back to my memory banks, and I sometimes struggle to remember what moment happened in any given episode in Discovery or Picard, because a lot of it just kind of blurs together, and you kind of forget, you know, did Seven of Nine appear for the third time? Was it the Impossible Box or was it Broken Pieces? Like, I don't know. It's kind of lost on me.
Yeah, actually, a friend of the show and guest on this podcast many times, Scott Hardy, has been doing a rewatch of the original series. And it's fun just having him message to let us know what episodes he's just watched. And all I need is a title, and it is instantly like evocative of all the images and ideas in those episodes. You know, it doesn't feel like someone just tossing out like a Picard episode where I go like, okay, so wait, where are we on the Borg cube at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just kind of dig the title of this series, Strange New Worlds. I think it's so obvious, yet we never really kind of thought about it, you know? So.
Tyler, Star Trek, original crew. They're saving that for another show. That'll be the Robert April spinoff.
Okay, I get it. They could have also gone with New Life and New Civilizations, but that doesn't quite roll off the tongue as easily. But it also just makes, like, I think it's genius if you can kind of sell the tone of the show, sell what the pitch is all within the title, Strange New Worlds. I feel like I know exactly what this is all going to be about. And it's actually something I've been begging for with Star Trek Discovery ever since season one, where it didn't really feel as if they're visiting that many Strange New Worlds. We had Kaminar, you know, Saru's home planets. We also had the really boring planets that Ash and Saru and Burnham went camping on during the Klingon War.
Yep.
But beyond that, I don't know, like, any other memorable planets stick out to you?
Well, I mean, I guess you had sort of some mirror universe stuff, like the rock quarry where the, you know, the wolf inside was set. There's that, I guess.
Yeah. You know,
it wasn't memorable, like, but yeah.
Even Kronos was kind of weird because you're like, oh, I guess there's lots of volcanoes in Kronos. Who knew that? But I guess this is how we solve the war with the threat of thermonuclear destruction through volcano shafts.
I'll say this for the Kronos stuff, like the idea of the Orion like market and everything was at least an interesting visual and created an atmosphere. So it did give us
that. I totally agree. Yeah,
that worked. Sure. And I mean, that's what a lot of Star Trek, the original series was we're going to this planet, but ultimately we're going to one set, you know, location that somehow conjures up a whole feeling and atmosphere that applies to the whole world that we visited. And that's something that, just given budgetary restrictions, will probably be the case even with this show, not to the limitations the original series was working for or was working with, but, you know, they've got to make what they can do with the money they've got. And so, like, I look forward to more of that imagination, like we got with that Orion market, just world building in smaller scale that we can apply to the bigger scale.
But also, look, I'm always a fan of bottle episodes. I still think that arguably the strongest episode of Discovery yet is Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. that was a bottle episode. It all took place on the ship. I think that it's going to be fun to rediscover the 1701 in this situation. It's not quite the ship that we meet, I guess, 7 or 8 years in the future when Kirk takes command, but it's going to be cool to like look at these sets that would have otherwise just been out of the budgetary reach of NBC back in the day.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, exactly. And I mean, they also have the ability, just like Enterprise did, to kind of pepper in elements of the other shows as well, like whether it's Enterprise, whether it's Discovery, whether it's TOS, just to kind of help make that world feel very expansive and original, just by throwing in little, you know, shavings of this and pinches of that, just to make it feel realized and lived in. Again, you can do that without spending $1 billion.
You know, pop quiz for you, just before I lose my train of thought here, but what series do you think has the best name for a series, and which series do you think has the worst name for a series?
Oh, that's excellent. That's an excellent question. I would say let's start with the best. I think Voyager is actually a really good title.
Yeah,
I agree. Pretty good. That one I really like because it does feel very like adventurous. I think actually Discovery is a pretty good title.
That's my pick is, yeah, Discovery, just for the record.
Yeah, like I can't say that Discovery, that title, has lived up to what the show is. I think the show has become its own unique animal that maybe doesn't really deserve the title Discovery.
Maybe it's inner Discovery, Cam.
Well, it seems to be at this point. Yeah. And I mean, you really can't also overlook the original Star Trek, which just that those two words together, it's just that the fact is that was 50 plus years ago, and we've now added the second, you know, or the third words and fourth words onto there that make it sound extra cool. So, I mean, you know, obviously the original, but Voyager is the one I would have gone with.
A couple of contenders for the worst, because I think there's a bit of a mixed bag of episode titles out there, but what's your pick, sir?
The worst, I think I would probably say, and this is going to be heresy for some people, but I think The Next Generation, I just don't know that it was even that original at the time.
It's
I do
pretty
think was
silly sounding as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I have to imagine there's probably sequels to movies around this point in time that also used The Next Generation in their titles, and it was kind of just like a buzz term for like...
Sounds very 80s.
It does, and it kind of just means like recast everyone and we can continue the story. Yeah. And obviously TNG became so much more than just what its title would indicate. It really did become a whole other adventure unto itself. But as a title, it's kind of like, yeah, I guess. It sounds very it sounds kind of cash in, honestly.
Yeah, for me, I would give it to Next Generation, but I think a very close runner-up would be Picard. I think it actually would have been just a much stronger title if Star Trek wasn't in the name, if they just called it Picard rather than Star Trek, Picard. It's a bit of a weird one.
Yeah, and I mean, we did talk a lot about that before that show was officially given a title. I just think they always wanted that branding in there of the, you know, the words Star Trek. It's fine. I mean,
they didn't want to repeat what they did with Enterprise and then having to revert to Star Trek Enterprise halfway through the series.
Yeah, like, but even the title Star Trek Picard or just Picard, it doesn't give you a lot of feeling of mystery that I think the other ones do. Even Deep Space Nine, before you've seen that show, you're like, what is Deep Space Nine? When I hear Picard,
what happened to Deep Space 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? That's
exactly
the mystery I have now.
Exactly. Just the deep space aspect is very like haunting and mysterious. Whereas I hear Picard, I go, cool, more Picard.
You know? Didn't feel like the Picard writers were trolling us in like episode 8 or 9 when they made a reference to Deep Space 12. And I was like, oh, guys, come on. You can't give us the ship make a pit stop at Deep Space Nine along the way. That would have been delightful.
Maybe season 2.
Well, yeah, sure. Cam, why don't we talk about like the possibility of other characters popping up on the series? We talked about the big three. Let's just jump over to Dr. Boyce. You know, we have this a bit of a fan campaign to get Jeffrey Combs cast in this role. You and I were not good at fan casting, but as soon as somebody mentioned this, I was like, great Scott, that's genius. You know, what do you think about this particular fan casting element here?
I mean, I love it, but I do have questions. You know, as we mentioned earlier, we have the three Caucasian leads. Like,
yes, yes.
Are they maybe going to say, well, look, Boyce, I believe the actor was about 59 when he shot the cage. It's not ridiculous that we might have a newer doctor in by the point in which this show picks up with this crew. So maybe we get a new doctor brought in, injecting that energy of also some uncertainty and how this character gels with the crew. Look, I will never argue against seeing Boyce on the show. I have campaigned hard for Boyce myself since, I think, the first episode, Brother, of Star Trek Discovery Season 2. So, believe me, I am pro-Boyce, but well, what was it wouldn't your shock Mary, me.
Didn't you do a Mary Wiseman photo op that referenced Boyce?
Yeah, it's me and Mary Wiseman, and I'm holding up a photo of Boyce, and we're both doing the, like, where is he kind of expression on our face.
I'm sure she got the reference when you pitched it to her during the photo op.
I think I just kind of got like a blank stare and I, okay, sounds good.
Yeah, like the possibility of Boyce like returning maybe in like a reduced role, maybe as a recurring character. The thing that I had in my head though is like there's this one shot in Parting Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, the finale Season 2 Discovery, where Dr. Porter gives Stamets a look as if Stamets is a little like crazy or he's just babbling to like an imaginary friend. But the thing is, Stamets is going back with back and forth with Hugh Culber at that point. And I interpreted it at the time as, you know, Hugh's just imagining Hugh, that Hugh made good on his plan to transfer over to the Enterprise. And that's why I thought they were kind of planting seeds for Hugh to be in this spinoff. It sounds as if, you know, Wilson Cruz is part of Season 3 of Discovery, that he actually did make his way permanently aboard the ship. So I guess Dr. Porter, well, good on her for, you know, providing yet another medical officer aboard the Discovery with a reduced crew of, I think, like 25 people at this point.
Right. And I mean, one thing that they did actually, I thought, really well in the second season of Discovery was have the whole episode tied to the Talos IV in Vena. And I thought they did that beautifully. We don't need to see Vena on the Pike show at all. But I thought they did a beautiful job in paying off that character in a way that in many ways gave a little more dramatic depth than even the original, you know, the cage did. And so I do think they could even work Boyce into one episode and make that episode sort of central to maybe the end of this character's journey or something.
Passing the baton.
Sure. Yeah. Make us care. Send the character out the door, but just give us Boyce, you know, that's all I ask for.
And I should say this, though, like the series would presumably pick up in 2258. That's where we left off Star Trek Discovery. And we know that Kirk, you know, he comes aboard in 2265. He takes command at that point. We've got 7 years to play with. You know, we could have multiple, you know, chief medical officers or chief engineers come through the gates and I think the sky's the limit in terms of creativity, what to do there. One of the characters I was thinking about was actually introduced in the short trek, The Trouble with Edward. That was the outgoing chief science officer, Lynn Lucero. So obviously she's been replaced by, you know, Spock by, you know, sometime, I guess, before 2254, which is when Spock appears. But I wonder if there's a possibility for her. She lost her first ship because of toxic masculinity being exuded by that Edward guy. Do you think, it was a great performance from her. Do you think she might pop in for some reason? I don't know.
It makes perfect sense to have that actress back. She's someone with some credentials. She was the star, of course, in Alita Battle Angel. This is someone who has some talent, has a little bit of name value. It makes perfect sense to get her on that show every now and again. I would love to see her as like a Erica Hernandez type recurring character, you know, the captain of another starship that crosses paths with Pike and crew. I think that could be really fun.
For sure. Another person who appeared in a short trek was Tira Sidhu. She's that engineering cadet. This is an Ask Not. We were not fans of this episode, or this short trek, but I think that the character has potential if it's kind of the that wet behind the ears, eager to please sort of character coming aboard, you know, one of the most magnificent ships in the fleet, trying to do her best. She could be very much kind of your entry point character as well. And like Lucero, it's not going to be white person coming in to fill up the rest of the cast.
Yeah, I think this character would work really well. And yeah, I kind of said off the top that I don't know that it's essential we have Yeoman Colt in a starring role, but working a character like Sidhu, that totally would work. And we can learn who that character is and what her specialties are as the series progresses.
Do you think it'd be fun to have somebody like Matt Decker come in during his prime? You know, Matt Decker, best known from Doomsday Machine.
I would love that. I would love if they worked in some established characters. I've said in the past off air that I would love if Robert April showed up for an episode or two and we could officially add him to the live action canon of Star Trek, you know, the earlier Captain of the Enterprise. I would love to see characters like that who have some name value with Star Trek fans, who there's enough there. There's enough of a kernel to expand on them and make them really
Captain,
interesting.
Captain, not kernel.
I knew I was setting myself up for that right away, as soon as it came out of my mouth. But no, I'm really hoping we can do that and work in characters like that. Another character who I would really like to see on this show is Laurel. I think that's something that we are going to have a Klingon presence on this show. And I thought, you know, Laurel was a fantastic character that kind of got bounced around in weird ways throughout her two seasons on Discovery, but she became iconic, incredibly popular. Mary Chifo became a fan favorite at conventions. I would love to see Laurel given more to do, and especially in a little bit of a different tone too.
What about Ash Tyler? He's still around in this time period too.
Yeah, that's an excellent, you know, one to bring up as well.
I think
because
it's different whether we want to see him back. I both think you and I are kind of done with that character, but I think for whatever reason the writers want to prove that he's a great character and they might just want to bring him back for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't it seem like with Captain Pike, Anson Mount seems like the perfect type of actor to put in like a Section 31 type story. He has kind of like the sexy intrigue kind of thing going on. You could definitely milk that for a story or two. I can't say that I'm eager for any more Section 31 on Star Trek. That's not something I'm asking for. But, I mean, you have, you know, Ash Tyler, this character that's now floating around in the ether with no show attached to him. I think they like the actor. So it wouldn't shock me if he shows up, you know, in an episode or so.
Yeah, there's the possibility very strongly that he would be in the Section 31 spinoff that they're doing, but who knows if that even comes to fruition. I just don't sense that there's any eagerness amongst fans for the Section 31 spinoff. I think that's Giorgio, like Mira Giorgio, as soon as they started making her arch, they actually figured out the character instead of just making her a sociopath. I'd love to see Michelle Yeoh back, but I have no interest in the Section 31 spinoff, and especially one featuring Ash Tyler in command of Section 31.
I think the only way they could make Section 31 exciting to people is if they announced that there was like a legacy character tied into it somehow. At this point, like, I just don't know that that like even Discovery's fan base is big enough to like boost enough enthusiasm for a Section 31 spinoff, because whenever you make a spinoff of an existing show, you're going to lose a few of the viewers anyway. So I don't know.
Well, I've got the legacy character for you that would fit in perfectly. What about a return of Samuel T. Coakley, the lawyer from, what is it?
Court-martial?
Court-martial, yeah. Section 31 operative.
I mean, I would not turn down that character returning, but I don't know that Section 31 would be his jam.
Doesn't matter to me. Get Coogly in the job.
Can you be in Section 31 if all you want to deal with is old books?
Another potential character, I think it'd be just silly not to bring him back, but Harry Mudd.
Yeah. Rainn Wilson was so great, and you know, we had feelings about bringing Harry Mudd back, but I think Rainn Wilson did a lot. And I think had a certain authorship over that character, especially by the time you got to his short trek, where it really was kind of honing in on what Harry Mudd could be for the modern era that also evokes maybe the better elements of his original series episodes. I would love to see Captain Pike crossing paths with Harry Mudd. Like, why not?
I can imagine the two of them having a hilarious back and forth, though.
Well, the thing about Pike that's so great, the way Anson Mount plays him, is he's cool, but he's also square. And I remember there was critics making fun of his "hit it" line as like saying it's like your dad starting off a road trip. Like, there's nothing cool about it. And yet, because it's Ensign Mount, because he has this gravitas, it somehow becomes cool, even though it is like Huey Lewis music.
Cam, I've met your dad before. He would never say hit it with regards to putting the pedal on the metal for a road trip, would he?
Nope. All he would be doing would be cranking up the Dirty Dancing soundtrack.
You know, one thing that we should address as well is like the potential for original series characters, like the main cast, to start slowly creeping into the series as it goes along. Are we going to be seeing a Sulu in Botany, for example? Would Scotty be showing up a couple years before Kirk does? You know, those are like, there's not going to be a Chekhov, for example, but there's just throngs of all these characters that they could kind of drop in there as we get closer and closer to the Kirk era. What do you think about that?
I would love to see Sulu in particular, because I don't think Sulu had a ton to do on the original series. And I think you could make that character more dynamic and add a lot of fun. Yeah, he's not navigating necessarily. He might be down in Botany, but I do think you could give him some really interesting stuff to do. Scotty is maybe more versed in the original series. Like, there's a lot more of him. He gets to do really dynamic stuff, like run the ship. But of course, it would be fun to see him. But I feel like I would like to see more Sulu and even Uhura characters who are iconic, but not necessarily, you know, they didn't walk out of the original series with exhaustive volumes of material that they got to do.
I think there's so much to uncover just from kind of the characters' layers at this point. So I'd be down for that. One of the story elements that people have been pointing out would be like, how much tension is there going to be with the series if we ultimately know the fate of Pike and Spock week to week? For me personally, I watched Next Generation and I know the fate of all those characters, even when I'm watching an episode on, you know, it's the fifth or sixth time I've seen the episode. I don't have to wonder about whether it's a life or death situation for there to be dramatic tension throughout a series. So that's not really something that I'm too hung up about.
No, and we just watched Picard, and you know, the show is called Star Trek Picard. It was greenlit for 3 seasons. We knew he wasn't going to go anywhere.
Greenlit for 2 seasons.
For 2, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we knew he wasn't going anywhere. But
yeah.
I would argue, you know, the fans of that show had no problem, you know, suspending their knowledge that he wasn't going anywhere and able to emotionally attach themselves to the story that was happening. And I don't see why that would be any different with Pike. Because even though we know Pike's ultimate fate, we don't really know who he was as a person at that point.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty big gap between him, like, you know, moping on his bed in the cage to where Sean Kinney took over the role.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be great if they just get Sean Kinney back in the series playing Anson Mount's father or something. That would be funny.
Sean Kinney is still very spry. I mean, he's in decent shape. He could totally show up as a, you know, bit player, a cameo or something like that on the show. I don't think that would be any sort of problem.
Okay, hashtag everybody, hashtag bring back Kinney. Bring back Kinney. One of the other things that could be interesting dramatically, though, is we really don't know what comes of number one.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be a tragic fate that awaits her? Could it be her own command? I think what that would lead to, though, if she does depart the series at a certain point, a couple seasons in, well, presumably it's now the journey of Spock, you know, sitting in the XO position at that point. I think that's going to be fun watching him just dip his toes, because we actually see in the original series, he wasn't always great at that job. It took to, what, maybe something like Galileo 7 for him to kind of figure things out?
That's kind of the episode that is the, you know, knock to the head that gets him to wise up to how to be a better leader, because he's really terrible throughout a lot of that episode, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a couple of aliens that I think might be fun to bring back here. They were alluded to in Ask Not, the short trek. It would be great to see the Tholians realize once again, for the first time since, I guess, would have been Enterprise in a Mirror Darkly two-parter.
Yeah, I think the Tholians are incredibly iconic and have been somewhat underused. I think a lot of that had to do with the limitations of, I think, effects, and even the way the original series depicted them was so strange that I think a lot of showrunners looked at that and said, we don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
But I do think this does open the door to do a new take on the Tholians, make them more realized. Like, one of my favorite things about Enterprise, and I've talked about this in the past, is how they took, you know, like a species like the Andorians and added so much complexity and world building to them so that like now the Andorians, they were always cool because the design was so cool, but we now have so much more of an understanding of them and we care about them that much more. So I would love to see them do more of that with original series aliens or Enterprise aliens. Maybe not the bumpy headed ones from the episode Civilization of Enterprise, but
sure. But well, maybe that civilization has advanced dramatically in the ensuing 100 or so years. So that, you know,
sure.
Reed can get his communicator back from them.
Or those giant space snails. Do you remember those?
Space snails.
Yeah, that's from Enterprise as well. Yeah, they were like taking the form. I think Archer had a love affair with a snail or something. It's in like the first season.
But hey, we've all been there, man. It's quarantine time.
But, you know, like the Tholians would be great to see. What do you think the odds are we're going back to the Mirror Universe?
Oh, I think they're high.
Yeah.
I think that's just going to be so fun to do because we also know that, remember in Mirror, they established that the way that Kirk took command is that he assassinated Pike. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's a fun way for them to introduce an actor to one day play Kirk down the road, if that's kind of the story that they're telling. And it doesn't have to be a crossover. You know, they could pull a Star Trek Enterprise where they don't feature any of the prime characters. They just jump over to the Mirror Universe and have some fun there. And I think that's what the episodic format can really lend itself to. And it'd just be awesome to see everybody from the Mirror Universe. Perhaps we'll see Prime Lorca, you know, maybe there's an adventure involving Prime Lorca and his efforts to get back or something.
Oh, 2 points there. I'll finish the Mirror Universe stuff, but let's talk about Lorca in a second, a Prime Lorca.
Sure.
But I think it would be really fun even to do, as you said, like a kind of standalone Mirror Universe episode, only featuring Mirror Universe characters, establish them and then cross them over after, where we have a really good idea of both crews. I think that could be really fun as well, and that's something they could definitely play with.
The only issue, though, is that they did establish that like there wasn't that kind of contact going on, right?
Yeah, but Pike did know about the Mirror Universe, so...
He did, because of the Discovery thing, but it was like, I think, how do they explain what ends up unfolding in Mirror with it's Kirk and Spock and nobody has any idea what any of this is.
Yeah, well, I mean, if some of it's perhaps top secret thanks to Section 31 interference, thanks, Ash Tyler, that could write you out of it as well.
I can't get my head around the Spock factor. I guess that's...
Spock is not going to the Mirror Universe. I think like everything to do with Spock, he is somehow sidelined through that episode should it happen.
That's why I was pitching like just a standalone Mirror Universe character only. I just think it would probably kind of avoid some of the potential continuity issues. Although, let's be honest, with modern Trek, they do some rather convoluted jumping through hoops for certain storylines. So I wouldn't put it past them to do a bit of a crossover there. But what are your thoughts on Prime Lorca making a return?
Well, I mean, Jason Isaacs teased this, and I think we were all kind of open to it. We didn't like the way that, villainous Lorca went, Mirror Universe Lorca, but Jason Isaacs is so charismatic. He's so much fun at conventions. He's so much fun with the fans that he just strikes me as the type of actor you'd want to get back if you, you know, had a good opportunity to use him. And with Discovery going into the future, I think we were kind of like, oh...
Yeah,
we are not going to get a Prime Lorca now, unless maybe on a Section 31 show, which, I don't know, do we want a dark show with a Lorca character again? Maybe not. But to me, this could be really fun to see Prime Lorca pop up somewhere. And even though it is an episodic show, they are going to want that element of feeding back on their own universe that, you know, CBS has created in the all-access age. And suddenly we can bring, you know, Lorca back. Why wouldn't you do that? We live in a post-Avengers world now where you want to combine your franchises. This is a perfect opportunity to bring Lorca back in.
Yeah, and I'm curious what he's been up to and how Prime Lorca differs from Mirror Lorca. Because we've never met Prime Lorca, so how is this character distinct? You know, and I think that could be an intriguing question. There's also the opportunity for us to follow up with some of the storylines that were introduced in Discovery with, you know, goateed Sarek, for example, you know, or the wolf, as they called Voke in that universe. Like, there could be some real fun elements to play with, because I don't picture Sarek making an appearance on Strange New Worlds in the Prime universe, just because we know the estrangement that he and Spock had until Journey to Babel.
That is true, although I do wonder if, I mean, James Frayne was so great in that role that I just wonder if they find a way to work him in organically into a story, you know, maybe one episode or something like
I
that.
I hope
just,
so.
Just because he's so good. And I
would
love to see
Amanda coming back for sure.
Yeah, I would love to see Mia Kirshner come back as Amanda. I thought she was great too. I think they've done a good job in casting these supporting roles in Discovery that, and then obviously leaving them behind, that there's plenty of room to bring them in. Now, all that said, I am hoping Pike establishes its own identity and does its own thing. But, you know, I have no problem with, you know, once or twice a season bringing back a you know, current era character or even a legacy character.
What do you think? Do you think Pike's going to be haunted by the Talosians at all? Or is that just done?
Do we want a haunted Pike? I mean, like, in terms of Talosian presence on the show, I would say...
It was done quite well
in
Discovery Season 2. Absolutely.
Yeah. The thing about the Talosians is you don't need them. They've kind of fulfilled their dramatic purpose, both in, you know, the original series as well as that episode, If Memory Serves. But, boy, they're incredibly iconic.
Yeah.
So it might be hard to keep them off the table forever.
Look, if they've got a fantastic idea, then I'm all for it, you know, but just don't bring them back for the sake of it. Yeah, I just wonder, though, is because the thing is where we leave off with Pike in Discovery Season 2 is he knows what comes of him. He knows that he's going to have this debilitating, horrific injury, and that did seem to haunt him in that episode. So that's why I bring up whether he's going to feel haunted by the Talosians to a certain degree, knowing that maybe his only salvation exists in returning to Talos V.
Or maybe, you know, what if we had an episode where Pike came across like a you know, a renegade Talosian who is not living on Talos?
Ooh,
that would be another way to, yeah, that'd be another way to work in that alien species in a way.
And he's got an eye patch on to signify that he is a rebel.
And he talks in a French accent.
And he's got a pack of cigarettes rolled up on his t-shirt too. And he combs his hair with one of those like switchblade sort of combs that he pulls out of his back pocket.
And he lives on Stardust City.
Okay.
But yeah, that would be a fun way. Like if they are going to work in some of these aliens that maybe in terms of story mechanics, we say like, ooh, like this alien species or this character or this world doesn't necessarily lend itself to revisiting, maybe they can find sort of a backdoor way of introducing a side element of that. Like, you know, when we did the Enterprise Season 4 extended arcs, I didn't need a Khan story, but they found a really cool way into that through the Augments three-parter. So, like, I am totally down for stuff like that on this show as well.
Yeah, a couple logistical questions to ask you. When do you think Strange New Worlds will actually premiere? And I'm, of course, talking about this Strange New World in which we're living, where we really don't know when, you know, Hollywood productions will resume again or in what form they'll take, you know. What do you think is realistic, though, Cam, at this point?
It's so tough to know when productions are going to even happen. The one thing I will say that I think is good for this show is we might go into production of this show with like a solid set of scripts as opposed to writing on the fly, because there's nothing else to do right now but write scripts and make deals. So that could be a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, but in terms of production, it's just so difficult to say.
Do you think 2021 is unrealistic?
I don't think it's unrealistic.
Well, because I'll throw this at you as well. This kind of leads to my next question, because the next question is, where will it film? They have the sets over in Toronto. I don't know if they can get the tax credit. I'm sure everybody involved would rather be filming it in Southern California. But do they, I don't know, fold the sets, ship them across the country? The other issue is with all these Canadian productions, they're very much dependent on international actors being able to travel across the border. If they get some sort of leeway there, I don't know, are these actors going to have to stay in quarantine for 2 weeks before they're allowed on set to shoot for 2 or 3 days at a time? Like, there's some logistical nightmares involved with the potential for filming in Toronto moving forward.
I mean, my guess would be that it would make more sense, given the current way the world is looking, to just ship those sets to LA and just work on the studio lot. I mean, I think that maybe more like work in controlled circumstances versus, you know, getting on flights back and forth between countries.
Yeah,
I just think, I mean, I don't like to say that for the fate of the Canadian, you know, film industry. But in terms of a Star Trek show that wants to be on the air, I think it might be better to.
So then what does the future hold for season 4 of Discovery if it gets the green light?
Well, I think we may just take a little bit of a break, maybe even between shooting Discovery seasons.
Yeah.
They have teased potentially that that's when Section 31 could shoot. Or maybe they focus on another show. I don't know. But I think Discovery, I'm not too worried about that one because we got a little bit of ways to go. So, but again, it could move. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. It's just, as great as this news is, I think there's some major hurdles to overcome. And I think it might be a long, long time before we actually get to see Strange New Worlds realized on screen.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see Discovery Season 3 before that. We're going to see Lower Decks Season 1 before Strange New Worlds. We're going to see Picard Season 2 before Strange New Worlds. We've got a ways to go. I just want to make that clear to everybody.
Do you think we see it before 2023?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'd say, if I'm being realistic, I would hope for late 2021. But I think early 2022 is probably more realistic given where things are right now in the world.
Okay. I mean, that's nothing. Tyler, how often do you and I remember a movie we saw, look up what year we saw it, and then just be like, wow.
I know. The days are past. Well, time is passing by even faster during this pandemic as well.
Yeah. But, I mean, we saw Star Trek Beyond like 4 years ago.
Good God. Wow.
Time flies.
It also just makes you realize like what nincompoops are running Paramount, where we've only been able to get a total of 3 movies over 11 years.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, whatever progress that's going on with the Noah Hawley Star Trek film, probably a little halted too right now. So
a little bit. Just yeah. You know, the fact like during that same period of time that I'm talking about, we got 6 original series movies. Like that's ridiculous. So,
yep.
The other thing, just with us and dates, remember years and I don't know, probably like 4 years ago, you and I were talking about the earliest Star Trek had ever returned to television. This is before CBS announced that it was reviving the franchise. We were like, well, maybe we can hope for 2020. And right. Already we've got 2 seasons of Discovery. We have 1 season of Picard. We've got Lower Decks and Discovery Season 3 on the way. I think we're doing okay. So maybe Strange New Worlds will be here a lot sooner than we're predicting.
I mean, I hope so. I hope they do figure out ways to allow film groups to actually shoot their films or their TV shows because, you know, people do need entertainment. And, you know, it's just nice to have Star Trek continuing to roll out, especially while it has the heat on it and the interest. You know, you don't want to necessarily let that lapse.
No. Absolutely not.
Especially a show like this where so much of it was driven by fan enthusiasm.
I bet fans are enthusiastic for just anything that will take their minds off the current state of the world. So hopefully we can keep that torch going for a couple years.
Well, you know, you say that, and I am curious, like, is this the Star Trek show we need right now?
Yeah, it is. Like, if I'm being honest, Picard was not the pick-me-up spinoff that maybe I was hoping, especially during the tail end of that season came as the pandemic was intensifying. It did not give me good feelings inside my tummy, I'll say that much.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think it really touched the zeitgeist in the way that the best Star Trek shows do, where you really like feel that spirit of the here and now. And I am really looking forward to more of that optimism of Strange New Worlds. And you know, we have a lot of dystopian sci-fi right now. Some of it's great. Like, believe me, no one's going to fawn more over Mad Max Fury Road than me, or even Blade Runner 2049.
I'll give a shout out to Alison Pill's series Devs that was on FX. That was a fantastic, very kind of dystopian, well, a gloomy view of science fiction, but it was something that I was very engaged with the stories that they were telling.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that's something, you know, they kind of promised us this optimism in Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard, and they were both often very dark and violent, and that's fine, I guess. Like, it when it worked, it worked. When it didn't, it really, really didn't. Sorry, Icheb. But I would like to see this show, you know, basically embrace, I mean, I think we all agree, Discovery was at its best when it was doing the more optimistic, lighthearted stuff, like the brighter stuff. Like, that's when it was at its best for the most part. And I would like to see this show really embrace that and do what it can with that, because it's cool to have dark episodes. You know, Taste of Armageddon is a very dark episode of the original series, but it's that optimism and that spirit that's going into that story that makes it work so well and why it's so iconic now. So I would love to see more of that. And I think, like, Pike is the character we really need as a lead right now. I mean, I hate to say that again about the Caucasian male character. Like, this is what we need, people. But I think even outside of that, it's just the performance of Anson Mount is such a great grounding force. And he was, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, the captain that we all kind of wanted, really, even since Janeway. You know, people are up and down on Archer in a lot of ways. We haven't really gotten a great inspirational captain out of Discovery, or even, I don't think Picard was anywhere near as inspirational on Picard as he was on The Next Generation. And so, like, what Anson Mount's given so far is really a little more of that throwback to your Sisko, your Janeway, your Kirk, your Picard, that captain we can all kind of stand behind and actually believe in.
Well, I'm sure he's happy to hear that you are turning him into Atlas with the weight of the world on his shoulders.
He can do it. I mean, and I do believe to a certain degree, Anson Mount has talked at cons about how much he loved the original Star Trek. It would not shock me if a lot of his interest in coming back was in negotiations about what he wanted this show to be.
Yeah, no, I could believe that myself.
And it does seem like the three, you know, main cast members, it seems, are all feeling very similarly about what they want the show to be, which is nice. I mean, that's a good thing to have a unified three that actually believe in a vision of something.
For sure, yeah.
Any other final thoughts on Strange New Worlds before we wrap it up?
I've shared all my thoughts. What about you?
Let's leave the torment and the anger of the 24th/25th century behind. Let's go back to the times when it was fun and we all had a great adventure every week. That's all I really
feel. You mean the reason why we started watching Star Trek in the first place?
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't want angry admirals swearing anymore. It's making me sad. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
Cam, we are going to do something a little different. I kind of like to call it Star Trek as comfort food. I've been talking about how we're in the midst of a pandemic, and look, there's some episodes that are just easy to pop in, and they just kind of make you feel good. And I think maybe we can get that out of Strange New Worlds, hopefully. And I think we'll dive into a lot of these cool episodes that don't always get their due, but the ones that just make us feel comfortable and make us really realize this is the reason why we watch Star Trek. And listeners, we're not just going to say, yeah, all good things. You know, like we've talked enough about those kinds of episodes, like the best of the best. This is about the comfortable ones, the ones that we just enjoy sitting down, kind of vegging out to a certain degree, but they make us happy.
Yeah, I probably won't be mentioning the episode Dark Page in that one.
I guess it's on my list, so somebody will be talking about it.
Okay, so you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in Vina. We like you, but we don't necessarily need you, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's Reporton. N as in new worlds that are strange.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.